The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's March the 15th, 2024, and this is episode number 28. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about how the deal to allow Ford to use Tesla charging connectors and the supercharger network came together, the unleashing of the Porsche Taycan Turbo GT, and how bankruptcy rumors are hurting Fisker, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the debonair Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the melodic Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Hey there, everybody.
Morning.
Afternoon. Good to see you all. All right. So before we get into today's show, I just wanted to thank Kyle for the opportunity to take part in another charging race. So last week we talked about Tom and Kyle racing two Ford F-150 Lightnings from New Jersey to Florida. Last weekend, well, actually, Kyle, I don't want to say anything that I'm not supposed to say before, you know, video comes out. So I don't know, what do you want to say about last weekend?
Yeah, well, we've already announced what we were doing on the last show. So we got four electric trucks together, Rivian R1T. Oh no, is my connection going bad?
It's okay. You hear me? It's okay. It's okay. Yeah, it's fine.
Uh-huh. Okay, because you guys all froze.
Yeah, it's okay.
The Rivian R1T, the Cybertruck, the Silverado EV, and the F-150 Lightning. And we raced all of them across the country. So, yep, four trucks. And we had a blast. Really good time. We had 13 people and all friends of ours. And we basically left Jacksonville, Florida, and said, whoever can get to San Diego first wins. And we'll have a full, you know, three-part long series that's in editing process right now with Max and Jordan, and not me, which means it'll actually get done. And so that will be available for people to see at some point over the next few weeks.
All right. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You are going to post your version of our trip to Florida first before that one, right? Because you see how many comments people are asking me about? They're like, when is Kyle's video going to go up?
Oh, because I haven't received anything on our side. I didn't think it was, since you already posted that, I was like, we'll post ours later. I might put the cross-country one up first. We'll see.
Oh, okay. A lot of people are asking for it, though. They keep pinging me on my video. When's Kyle's come up? I keep checking. So there's people waiting for it.
Okay. Well, you know, it's free content. They can keep waiting. I don't know what to say. We'll get it to them when we can.
That stings.
All right. It was a lot of fun, though. Didn't sleep for 2 days, two nights, and a little snoozes in the vehicle, I guess. But yeah, it's pretty interesting, though. Just crossing the country. It was just kind of awesome. But anyway, we should move on to today's news. So as many of you know, a couple weeks ago, Ford EV owners gained access to the Tesla Supercharger network. Now, this week, Tom, you published a big interview on the State of Charge channel featuring the CEO of the Ford Motor Company, Jim Farley, that dug deep into that whole story from the realization that Ford should adopt the charging connector that Tesla uses and gain access to the Supercharger network, all the way to the adapter that the company is now sending out to customers for free. So maybe you can start from the beginning a little bit about this conversation. That people should watch, actually, you know, go to State of Charge and check that out, because it's nothing like the real thing, baby, right? You could start, like, what was the impetus for this whole thing?
Yeah, so I was really pleased with this video. I think it came out real. This interview, I think, came out really well. You know, some you never know how the interviews are going to go. You never know how the person you're talking to. And then, admittedly, sometimes I don't even ask the right questions. You know, I'm not perfect in that regard. But this video, this interview, really seemed like it was good on both sides. And Jim is a great interview. This is the second time that he's given me the opportunity to sit down one-on-one and talk with him. Well, I didn't sit down. He was remote. He couldn't bring video because evidently he was in a place where I couldn't see his background. So we had to just do the audio, and then I had pictures and I put some B-roll up over it. But it's the second time he gave me the chance to do a one-on-one, which is really rare. There's not a lot of people out there that he's done one-on-one with, other than, like, you know, the CNBCs and the big, you know, the big news outlets. So what happened was, when, if you remember last week, when Ford got access to the Tesla Supercharger network, Kyle was the first person to use the adapter. I came a couple hours later because I was on a flight from Sweden, and Ford, the Ford people met me there and gave me the adapter, and we made a video. And I talked to them. I said, hey, you know, this is such great news. This changes the whole landscape of electric vehicles forever. Like, you've changed the landscape of this. And by Ford being the first person to announce it, everybody had to do it. So I said, I'd love to interview somebody at the company. And honestly, in my mind, I was thinking about Darren, right? You know, and
Darren Palmer.
Darren Palmer, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Ford rep, said, okay, well, who did you have in mind? So, you know, you always ask for more than what you want. Whenever you're negotiating or anything, like, you know, like if I would have said, you know, any, you know, a product manager or, you know, an engineer or something like that, you know, that's what I would have gotten. So I was like, well, you know, how about Jim? And they're like, Farley? I'm like, yeah, like, why not? You know, this is a big deal. How about get Jim one-on-one from me? So they're like, all right, we'll look into it, you know? And I was shocked, not shocked, but I was a little surprised. A couple hours later, I got an email back. I said, yeah, we talked to Jim. He's fine. He'd love to chat with you about this. So it was on. And I was able to get 20 minutes with just the two of us. And, you know, I think the interview went great. For those that didn't watch it, the comments are fantastic. One of the things that I noticed in the comment section was there's over 2,000 comments in, you know, since it's been out. And at least 200 or 300 comments that said, like, this guy is amazing. I didn't consider buying a Ford now, but I think I'll buy one now. Like, this worked well for me, obviously, on my channel, but it really showed well for Ford and for Jim, because the comments are all about, like, this guy, this is the type of CEO that I want running my company. And, you know, and that's the impression I get from Jim. Like I said, it's the second time we had a chance to talk. And the first time, when I was down at Blue Oval City, I was able to talk to him quite a bit off camera and off the record. And he's just like a down to earth, like, you know, you could tell blue collar family, you know, came up through the ranks and just was, you know, the right guy at the right place, and was promoted. And now he's CEO of Ford. I mean, his dad worked on the Ford production lines back, you know, in the 30s or 20s, whatever it was, 30s probably, you know, building Ford cars. So, I mean, he has his roots are in the company, and you could tell he cares about the company, and, you know, you could tell he cares about the customer. And, you know, that's important. So few CEOs can relate to the everyday person, but I think he's one of those that can.
Right. So can you tell us a little bit about the whole impetus behind, like, this move to adopt the Tesla Supercharger? I believe it had something to do with, like, a vacation or something with his kids.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that really surprised me the most out of the whole interview. When I talked to him, I was like, okay, so how did you come to this decision? From the outsiders, like all of us, it seems like an easy decision. Like, geez, if I ran a company, I would want access to Tesla superchargers, right? It seems like a super easy decision. But you have to understand that we're looking at things from different perspective. And, you know, I know that these companies all look like they were capitulating to a competitor if they said, okay, what you do is just better than what we do, so can we please have a piece of that pie? And I knew it was a hard decision. So I asked him, I said, what built up to doing this? Like, you know, Ford has these charge angels, they call them, which are a couple dozen people that drive around the country. And all they do is charge at different charging stations. And they report on uptime and how easy it was. And they even talk to other people charging at the thing. So they made this team that was supposed to try to figure out charging. So I really thought most of the decision was, after like 8 months of doing this, they came back to him and said, or to the company and said, this is broken. Our customers have a terrible experience. We need to improve it. But that's not what happened. What happened was Jim took his family on a road trip. And, you know, his son kept pointing out as they're driving, oh, Dad, there's a charging station. And Jim was like, yeah, we can't go there. That's a Tesla station, you know. And a half an hour later, like, oh, there's another one, charging station. Yeah, that's a Tesla station. We can't go there, you know. And then, you know, he had some issues with some of the stations that he was at. And when he came back, he was just like, this just isn't working. It's a bad experience road tripping for our customers, and we need to improve this. And so we initially had Doug Field, who was an ex-Tesla employee and also worked for Apple. He's Ford's like chief, I don't know if it's chief technology officer or something. I forget, not chief technology officer, but I forget what his position is. He reached out to, Jim reached out to Doug and said, look, you have a lot of friends at Tesla. You worked there for years. You know, can you reach out to your team, your old team, and the people that you're friends with, and feel test the waters? You know, is this something that they would be interested? So Doug contacted Tesla, and the answer was pretty much no. This isn't something that we would be interested. We wouldn't be interested in giving Ford access to the supercharger network. Which I'm a little surprised, because Tesla's position was always that they wanted to, you know, have. Everybody could have access if they just came and asked.
Right.
So we don't really know exactly what happened behind the field, behind the scenes. It's hard for me to understand that, you know, relatively high ranking people in the company, which I'd imagine Doug contacted, he didn't contact some guy working the assembly line, that they gave him the no answer without first consulting Elon. But we don't know that. We don't know if Elon was involved in that at all. But the answer came, if you're to believe Jim, the answer came back was no. This probably isn't something that we're interested in doing, partnering with you guys and giving you access. So some months passed and more discussions in the company went on. And Jim said, you know what, this just isn't working. I have to try to make this work. And he calls Elon. Elon took his call. And the way he describes it, he says, look, you don't know me. You don't know where I'm coming from. But you know, we are the second largest seller of electric vehicles in North America. And, you know, we would like access to the supercharger network. And, you know, I don't know how long that conversation was, but Elon came back and said, yeah, I think we can make that work. And within 2 weeks, they had the contracts ironed out, which that's pretty amazing. You know how long it takes big companies to make contracts. But Jim also said this was 2 years ago. So this was Jim only announced it a year ago. So right. That was already a fait accompli for maybe a year before they announced it. So I guess because he said there was, that just started the process. There was a lot of work that they had to do behind the scenes. So, you know, I mean, think about it. Basically, when Tesla started launching the Magic Docks, this deal with Ford was already done. We just didn't know about it. So right. That's pretty amazing.
So interesting question you asked them. Did other CEOs call them to complain?
Yeah, I had to ask him this because, yeah, I this was true. And I told them this. When they announced this, I swear that night, I was laying in bed thinking about the ramifications and everything. And as I was laying there, I say to myself, I guarantee every like CEO right now is laying in bed, the ones in my time zone or whatever, and they're saying, how do I navigate this? We have to do it. There's no other way. And right. And I would imagine there was some angst between them and Ford. So I asked him, I said, did like Mary Barra call you up and like yell at you? Like what the hell are you doing? You just, you know, now you know what headaches you caused me? And he laughed and he said that he imagined that also. He's like, I was thinking the same thing, that everyone was mad at me. He said, but you know, we knew once we did it that the rest of the industry was going to follow. They would have to.
I've got to say, Tom, I firstly really appreciated your questioning, which was respectful but robust, asking questions like, you know, did Ford capitulate to Tesla? So have they just rolled over here? And Jim took that one and said, no, the best customer experience is to use their charging network. And so you didn't shy away from asking those questions. Good question as well about, you know, by saying that J3400 is going to go natively on Fords from 2026 or end of 25. Do you then, you know, Osborne effect your current product lineup? And he was like, hey, I don't know. Okay, let's think about that. So you have so many CEOs just give BS answers of they've always got to have the answer. And he was like, like, good question. Like, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, okay, well, let's think about that, how we get the right vehicles to the right customers between now and then at the right prices. But, and he didn't try and just fob you off, you know, or whatever. And also my final point as well is that he had to take a journey to understand how bad it is. For anyone who's not been in the corporate world, and I've worked for small companies, medium companies, I've worked some really big, publicly listed, publicly traded companies of all shapes and sizes. And I've worked for a private company where the owner of that company, and I reported to him, he was worth hundreds of millions of pounds. I've worked in many different corporate environments. I can't tell you how insulated these people are from reality. Lunch is provided every day. A change of clothes when they have to go on stage to do a thing is provided. A script is provided when they have to do an event. A brief is provided. I'm not saying Jim doesn't live in the real world, because obviously he's got, you know, wife and kids and problems like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. His pay packet helps insulate him from the problems that you and I have. But I've sat in so many boardrooms where we all knew the problem, but if you are the... In some company cultures, if you voice that problem to the CEO or whoever, you have to be really bold and take a leap sometimes. And I don't know. I don't know the Ford company culture there, and I can't speak to that. But I can speak to the experiences that I've had where to sit in a room and go, we're screwing up, we need to change it. You've got to be really confident in, you know, being able to pay your bills at the end of the month. And you guys have a different culture. We can't just be fired. Like, you guys can be, you know, fired when, you know, at will. It's a really bold thing to do. And I can't tell you how impressed I was at his humility. What a fantastic interview, Tom. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. I thought it went well, but then I played it back and I was like, yeah, this really... it's one of my better interviews, and to have him, you know, who he is, it was the icing on the cake. He, you know, Martin, the whole thing about what you just said, I think it's because of his roots. I think it's because this guy came up in a blue collar factory. He wasn't a silver. So many of these CEOs of these big companies are silver spoon. They've never lived in the real world. He's lived in the real world. He's struggled the way we've struggled. You know, he's made it through life, you know, on his own persistence and his own talents. It wasn't handed to him. And unfortunately, a lot of big company CEOs, they don't understand the real world. He understands the real world. And I think that's part of why he's such a compelling, relatable CEO. And you go to some of my, the comments on this thing, and you should see like, you know, one person's like, as a Volkswagen owner, you know, I wish, just pay this man whatever it costs to make him CEO of Volkswagen. You know, it's like, you know, and the funny thing is, I remember years ago, I was on a Toyota press drive. I forget what it was. And that's when Jim worked for Toyota before he worked for Ford. And I remember one of the top product managers, we were talking about, you know, the industry. And he told me, he goes, you know, it was a huge hit when Ford poached Jim from us. What? And he said, watch that guy. He's the real deal. And he was right, you know. But anyway, the interview weren't really great. And we learned a lot of stuff. You know, we learned about that. We talked about, I don't know if Dom has more questions for me about.
Yeah, well, I got one here from, where'd he go here? Jim. Greg Poche asks or says, I still say Ford and others paid Tesla to at least help with the software updates needed. Do you know what did he mention what the kind of transaction situation going on with this whole thing?
So not in this interview, but I've asked him in the past, and I've asked Ford in the past, and the answer I got was absolutely not. We paid no money. We didn't pay Tesla anything.
Okay. And someone also mentioned about Ford giving away the adapters, the NACS adapters for free. So I guess that was Jim's idea originally, but it was kind of like it was planned. Because it puts the onus on all the other companies, right? So Ford is giving all their customers a free adapter. What are you guys doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I asked him about this, and the reason why I asked him about this, an interesting story. So when Farley announced this a year ago, he did it on CNBC, and he said, "And we're going to be giving all our customers adapters." I was surprised by that. We talked about it on the podcast that week, and I was like, "That's crazy!" Like, think about these adapters are probably. At the time, I said $300 or $400. It turns out they're only about $200, and they have 60,000, 70,000 E-Transits, Mach-Es, Lightnings out there. You know, that's an insane amount of money to be given away. So I reached out to my contacts at Ford, and they were just like, okay, we're not sure that's the case, so please don't run with that. Like Jim might have misspoke. He might have meant, we're going to make them accessible. We're going to make the adapters accessible to our customers, but we don't know if they're going to be free. So please don't print that. So, of course I could print that Jim said they were going to be free, but so I said, hold your horses. And I told people on social media, I don't think that that's going to be correct. But then it turns out, 6 months later or whatever, he's like, no, we're going to give them away for free. So I asked him about this. I said, what happened? Because I got mixed messages from your team. And he, if you watch that part of the interview, he's laughing like a hearty gut laugh because evidently something was going on behind the scenes. And he said, listen, I had to, as a CEO, sometimes you have to put your foot down and you have to make decisions. He said, there was a discussion on how we should handle this. And I made the decision. I said, this is what we're doing. We're giving them away. And the customers that want them, because, we're the ones that switched up the inlet, we have to take onus on that. And it's a good customer experience. We want our customers to buy another Ford product. And how do we ask them to do that? If we're now I'm telling them, oh, you got to give me $300 or $400 just so you could use the network. So, it was another baller move for him, in my opinion. I think, I think he did the right thing, and it makes him and Ford look good.
So I just got one last little thing that I wanted to, I think we should mention. So does Tesla get Ford customer data when they use superchargers?
Yeah. So that was interesting. I picked that one up from a bunch of my followers had sent me that question and said, is maybe that's Tesla's secret plan here. They're getting right. all my data. And Jim said, absolutely not. If you go through the Ford Pass app and right. use Plug and Charge, he said, that's our data. And he said that would have been a deal breaker. If Elon had told me, sure, you could use a network, but we want to get all your customers' data every time they plug in, he said, I wouldn't have done the deal. So, right. But they will get your data. There's two ways to activate the charge. You can go through the Tesla app or the Ford Pass app. If you go through the Tesla app, obviously they control what goes on within their native app.
Right. Yeah. So that's all my questions. I don't know if Kyle, you have anything you're curious about?
Yeah, I listened to the interview, thought it was fantastic, really enjoyed it. Was very impressed overall. And I think Tom covered it all in that interview. It was great. Everyone should listen to it.
Right on.
Thanks, Kyle. And as Martin said, you have to understand when you're interviewing a CEO, and I know some people say, I don't care, I'd ask him anything. There's a different level of respect, and there's questions you can ask and there's questions you really shouldn't ask. And if you ask the wrong questions, you don't ever get an opportunity to interview him or another CEO again. And I tried to push the envelope, as Martin said, a little bit with talking about, some of the questions that I asked and craft them the right way. And I think I was able to walk that line in this interview to get some good information, but not be disrespectful, as I said, this is one of the ones I'm proud of. Some of the interviews I do, I look back on and I'm like, I could have did a better job with that. But this was one that I think came out well.
Ultimately, he wants the company to be a success. He's probably got some personal benefits tied to the performance of either the share price and deliverables and stuff like that. And so he ultimately just wants success. And so he is probably craving real world data, real life conversations, and not to have everything filtered through a certain prism of, hey, Jim, everything's great at Ford. You're doing a great job. We're doing a great job. Things are wonderful. And that's no use to anyone. I'm sure it feels good for a moment, but to any CEO, that's not where their focus wants to gaze. And so I'm sure he loved having the, I mean, let's face it, Tom, you're not one to shy away from a difficult conversation, but
I'm respectful. You are respectful. I need to be, you know?
Yeah.
Other times, not so much. But.
All right. Hey, so about a month ago, Porsche unveiled the refresh of its Taycan electric sports sedan, and we talked about all the wonderful changes and updates. But we also knew that the company was holding something back because it had announced that a Taycan had set a class record of 7 minutes and 7.55 seconds around the Nürburgring Nordschleife, which is about 17.45 seconds faster than the Tesla Model S Plaid around that track and 26 seconds faster than the previous Porsche Taycan time. So now it's finally revealed this week, the Taycan Turbo GT, which is now the fastest variant that Porsche offers for the model, and is available in two specs, the Turbo GT, and also the Turbo GT with Vizac package, which deletes the rear seating for even lighter weight and is really built for the track. Oh, and besides Nürburgring, Porsche, with development driver Lars Kern behind the wheel, also set a lap record at my favorite track, Laguna Seca, of 1 minute and 27.87 seconds, which is pretty decent there. When initial delivery should happen this summer, customers will get cars that deliver 580 kilowatts or 777 horsepower, 988 pound-feet of torque, but that also have launch control that turns up that power to like a 760 kilowatts or 1,019 horsepower of overboost power, or up to 1,092 horsepower for like 2 seconds. I'm not exactly sure how that works, and we should have a product expert in here sometime. But this means that the Taycan Turbo GT can do 0 to 60 in 2.2 seconds or 2.1 with the Vizac package, and 0 to 124 miles an hour in 6.6 seconds or 6.4 with the Vizac package. So the secret to the increased performance, besides some weight savings and tweaked aerodynamics, is a new pulse inverter on the rear axle. In the Turbo S, it's a 600 amp unit, but in the Turbo GT, it's a 900 amp box. So it starts at $230,000, excluding fees and destination. So Kyle, what is the secret sauce here, do you think, that really helps it embarrass the Tesla Plaid? It's only got like 100 more horsepower, and then just for a few seconds, and despite the Vizac package having 137 pounds less of weight reduction, it's still like 134 pounds more heavier than the Tesla Plaid, and it also, which also has 62 more pound-feet of torque. How do they do this kind of monster lap?
Well, you know, the Plaid is optimized for straight line acceleration, and it's really good at that. And this is optimized for a total vehicle package. I own a Model S Plaid. I love my Model S Plaid, but no question, there's definitely some, some cornering sauce, some suspension work that is just left out of the car for various reasons. This has an insane suspension system that's called Porsche Active Ride that is essentially a 20 kilowatt suspension system that can force a wheel down into the pavement and can completely adjust the roll stiffness and separate the right and left side. I mean, it's so far superior to what Tesla is doing in that area. It's also significantly more expensive. You have probably better thermal longevity in this. Weirdly, the only thing, you have to hit the button for boost every time, and I think they did like 20 something presses along the lap to give it full power, which, just if they're doing it 20 times around a lap, just give me full power anytime I'm at wide open throttle. So I don't understand this whole push to pass Porsche thing. Yeah. Maybe when I drive it, I'll understand it a bit more. I was supposed to go drive this next week in Spain, but actually I just decided that Jordan should go instead because Yeah, we have a bunch of testing to do in Colorado with all the trucks. So yeah, I'll be spending time here. But I was really looking forward to having a go in it. So yeah, it could be conditions, could be driver, could be, you know, 50 million other things. Certainly tire comes into play. The Model S was with the track pack, which I think they ran on a Cup 2, but I could be wrong. I'm not sure what tire was on this. So many things come into laps beyond power. Power and weight right. are just two metrics that don't always add up to something really important. So, yep, could right. be a million things.
It's like when you race on paper, it's not always what happens in the real world. Like, because I doubt I have a, well, I don't, in on the Nürburgring, I'm wondering if the, like the Lucid Sapphire, which is, you know, has bigger numbers on paper than both of these cars, but it's also heavier, how it would do, you know. I don't know. It'll probably beat them in the street. I think that should be a good video, like just some drag racing with those three cars, because they should be really close.
Yeah, but keep in mind, just like the power, there's so many differences in powertrain logic in terms of traction control systems that go just beyond raw power. So, you know, right. power is just a figure at a point in time, and a lap is an entire test of the vehicle architecture. And there's so, you know, that just power is like 5% of the equation.
Right. And we're watching, actually, when you watch the, we watched some of the Nürburgring footage earlier, and it has a, you know, little output level for the accelerator and the brake. And it's just amazing to watch that lap and see like when he hits the brake and when he's full on that accelerator. In some situations, like, man, a lot of the, like this guy is the real deal. He can drive. He can drive the wheels off that thing. I was super impressed. So I don't know if we want to spend a whole lot of time on the thing though, because it's also $230,000. I think it can go up to $280,000 if you get a special paint color, and then you also do a special delivery kind of arrangement where you go to pick it up at the factory or at a special Porsche location. So that's out of my budget.
Yep, I just want to give them credit for doing this. And I've been working this week on some stuff with the VW ID1 and ID2 just to do some research on that, because that's the vehicle that's going to come. It's a couple of years away, and then the Porsche stuff as well. And it's all one company. And my point being, just props to them, because I'm not doing down the incredible job that Tesla do, but Tesla have got five vehicles to think about at the end of the day, you know, a handful of colors and a handful of options. And, you know, VW are letting their engineers go and do silly stuff like this. And it appeals to the brand whilst also saying, how do we get a car on the market for €20,000, $20,000 that's a small city car or a Polo or a Fox or, you know, whatever, or a VW Up equivalent. And it's just a fabulously hard job they've got to do, and competing in China against the domestic makers that are kicking their butt right now. So I loved seeing this, and I don't think some of the companies out there get enough credit for doing stuff like this, because it's a ridiculously hard job they've got to juggle all the balls at the minute.
Right. And it's behind the scenes to get one lap down on the Nürburgring for a company to do that. There's a months and months of preparation just for that one, you know, 7 minutes and whatever seconds kind of time. Months and months of preparation and massaging the car. And I like that point you made too, Kyle, about the suspension. I think that's really probably got a lot to do with that. You know, like that's a lot of power to be putting into your suspension, make it do all the things. I mean, that's something I don't know. Typical active suspension, like how much, what kind of power, do you know what kind of power levels those deal with, or if any?
But you're talking about, yeah, very, very little for like an active damper, but that's a response, right? So they right, can't right. put an input into the suspension, but Active Ride right. literally has a 5 kilowatt permanent magnet motor that's pushing hydraulic fluid on each corner that can just push and lift and do crazy things.
Right, so I've never heard of any like that kind of thing in any other car, except maybe like the Yang Wang U9. I think is that the one that does the dancing, but it uses the suspension to dance. I think it's got the same, a similar kind of suspension going on, but they don't, you know, they're not going around the Nürburgring. They're, I don't know what they're doing, but yeah, it was pretty impressive. Little message from Abe here: power is just a figure, as power says, it's all about. It's about how you utilize the power and make the systems work in a symphony to get the results you want. And that's indeed the case. All right. So I just checking a little message. I guess you're having a hard time hearing us there, Kyle.
Yeah, my connection is like a potato, and then sometimes it comes back and then it gets bad again. So
okay.
I think I might pop off and hit the road, but just because I'm missing half the show. I really apologize.
No problem. No problem. You can play it by ear, but you think if you can, if you want to try to hit us while you're driving down the road too, that's great too.
Maybe I'll pop in from the Cybertruck.
Oh, okay. That's
right. Yeah. We want to see that.
Cyber Beast. Oh man, that was great. It was funny hanging out with the Cyber Beast on the weekend. There's it's like a kid magnet, basically. Like if you're like a child or whatever, and you see that thing, their eyes.
It's an everyone magnet. Wait a minute, I can't let you get away with that.
Everyone loves it. Everyone loves
that too. But I'm just saying, especially definitely there was people stopping the cars. I guess in Florida, there's not that many in Florida, and they made some supercharger stops, I think, around Daytona area, and it was just kind of a madhouse or something. It's just a lot of it gets a lot of attention. A lot of people, you know, have questions and want to check it out, and that's kind of interesting. And it's, I think it gets a lot of, you know, it gets a lot of hate actually because of, you know, design and just different things. But if it's, you know, it really ignites the imagination of kids and different people and gets her thinking about, you know, EVs in a different way, I think it's a good thing regardless. All right. So while we're talking about Porsche, I think we should also mention that this week. Go ahead.
There's my lag. I'm going to pop off. I apologize. Okay. But I was going to say 99% of the comments online are terrible, and 99% of the comments in person are very positive and excited.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. And it's kind of interesting to see that in the real world. Okay. We'll see you, Kyle. Hopefully on the road.
Cool.
All right. Right. So speaking of Porsche, CEO Oliver Blume disclosed that it's been overwhelmed by orders for the new Macan EV, which is the first product to be built on the premium platform electric. So far, it's received orders for over 10,000 copies, which that doesn't include orders from China, Taiwan, or Japan. I think China's probably the big country there. So that's pretty big news. That's not quite internal combustion Macan numbers, of course, because that's been on sale for a while. What was I going to say? It's been on sale for a while. I don't know. I'm blanking out.
But still, this was always going to be the big thing following Taycan. The numbers for Taycan were good, but this was always going to be a better seller in the long term.
Right.
Well, it's the number one selling vehicle, right, Porsche? Right. The Macan general, at least in North America.
It changes places with Cayenne sometimes.
Oh, okay.
But they're pretty close. Yeah, I think last year it might have been Cayenne, but maybe the year before Macan. I don't know. Maybe Abe knows those numbers better. But it's a big seller. It's a big deal. And because it's like it's a known quantity too, it's been around for a little while. So people, you know, comfortable ordering that. But this is something that no one's driven or, you know, rode in even or checked out in the showroom. So to get over 10,000 orders from Porsche customers for a vehicle like that, I guess it's a big deal.
And I've seen some reporting, which I think is interesting, that the Audi Q6 e-tron is going to be significantly cheaper than this, but also a different beast to this as well.
Right.
So I thought it was, because the Porsche Taycan and the e-tron GT were incredibly similar vehicles. Start of the journey, the genesis of the idea was the same, and then the two teams go their separate way. It's not a, you know, a rip-off car either way. I mean, Taycan came first, so the e-tron GT was always in its shadow a little bit. I mean, oh, it's Audi's version, but it wasn't really. Two teams went away and did their own thing, and they're very different cars and very similar cars in many ways. But the Q6 e-tron appears to be perhaps $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 cheaper than some specs of this Macan, which I thought, again, I would have understood price parity, incredibly similar vehicles. But from the reporting that I've read, Audi will bring that in at a much lower price point, but also it won't be there won't be as much focus on performance. There'll be S versions and stuff. But I thought that was interesting that they're trying to separate them a little bit. So that gets an unveil Oh, do you know, Dom? I want to say March 18th. I want to say perhaps early next week.
Well, I'm not sure of the exact date. I know it's coming soon, though.
Because I'll Google it. Yeah.
Jordan from Outer Spec was over there actually getting a deep dive background on that vehicle as well. So maybe we can have Jordan on. I was thinking it might be next week. But we'll have to see.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, and also speaking of big reservation numbers, Rivian CEO RJ Scaringe last week disclosed its R2. That was the revealed. Kyle's hello from the comments section. Awesome. So RJ Scaringe revealed Rivian revealed the R2 vehicle last week, which is like the R1S SUV, but shrunken down a little bit and with a shrunken down price, which makes it more affordable and it looks awesome. So they've got, in just 24 hours, they got 68,000 orders. That's pretty good for, still a pretty young company. Yeah. So I'm pretty happy to see that. And like I was saying, we spent the weekend, last weekend, driving those cars, and I was actually in a Rivian for the first time. So I got a few hours of driving that thing. And I got to say, I really like it. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's pretty darn good.
Kyle posed a question last week, which was when the R2 finally arrives, Dom, and if you could get an R1S used, 2-3 years old, for the same or less money than an R2, he said that would be the play, or something like words to that effect. But and you were like, and you weren't sure. Now you spent a weekend in a Rivian. What do you think? If this was a used car, depreciated, had some miles on it, would you go for the bigger one? Or do you still, because at the time you're like, well, the R2 is smaller, that suits some, urban families and stuff, or who don't want just a bigger vehicle. Has your opinion changed or still the same?
If I was going for the SUV shape, I would go R2. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Just because the big one is just too big for me, but the pickup truck is even bigger. But if that was an option, I would go the big pickup truck. I was looking at that. I spec'd one out actually yesterday, and apparently the R1T that I like is like $91,000.
Get a couple.
If I made it in the color that I want, and I picked a dual motor. I didn't even go like the full four motor deal, like the two dual motor performance. And a color package and fancy.
A few more advertisers to this podcast before you can click on buy on that one, I think.
Right, right. Yeah, if you're interested in advertising on a podcast with some great viewers, we have a terrific audience, I got to say.
Best viewers in the world. Best podcast listeners in the world.
Yeah. So just drop us a line, Dominic at battersincludedpodcast.com.
I got a website as well, batteriesincludedpodcast.com. I think we registered the .com, didn't we?
I believe so.
And we put a simple page up there, but at the bottom you can follow us if you want to get in contact, just say hi or anything like that. So go and have a look at that. It's nothing special. It's just a page.
Right. So there was another bit of product news in the Volkswagen group I thought we should mention this week, and that's the Audi Q4 e-tron. There doesn't appear to be any visual changes to the vehicles, but the battery remains the same standard 82 kilowatt hour 77 usable pack. It gets the same AP550 motors that are in the Volkswagen ID4 and ID7. This increases the performance enough so that Audi has changed the designation of the Q4 e-tron from they've changed it from the Audi Q4 e-tron 50 to the Audi Q4 e-tron 55, so it's gone up five degrees on the Audi scale for that means. So 0 to 60 has improved from 5.8 seconds to 5 seconds, and the improved efficiency of the powertrain has also increased the range by 22 miles. So that now it boasts an EPA average of 258 miles, which it kind of seems, well, I guess that makes sense for that size of vehicle and it's in a 77 usable kilowatt hour battery. Charging speed has also improved. It can now take 175 kilowatts instead of 150 kilowatts. And the 10 to 80% time is down to 28 minutes. So not class leading, but I think probably on the acceptable. You tell us in the comments if that's acceptable, I guess. On top of this, it's also retuned the suspension and steering. So, Tom, this car isn't built in North America, So it doesn't get the $7,500 tax credit. So even though the MSRP stays at the original $55,200 or and $3,000 more actually for the more stylish Sportback, can it compete? Or are there dealers going to have to chop off, take a machete to these?
Just lease it and you get the tax credit.
Hmm. Oh, of course.
Everybody leases EVs anyway, because the tech is changing so fastly. I won't say so rapidly. I won't say everybody, but most people lease EVs. So I think our discussion on does this vehicle qualify for the tax credit versus vehicles that don't is you know, kind of moot, because most people lease EVs these days. You know, I know not everybody. I'm going to get some people in the comments saying I never lease a car, and I typically don't either. I purchase my cars, but the small percentage of people today outright purchase EVs because it's new tech and they're getting so much better every year that I think most people out there, I would venture to guess, a very high percentage of EVs, that new EVs that hit the road, are leased. And in that case, they have that lease loophole that you can get the full tax credit on every EV. So that's the way to go. And I like the Q4 e-tron. I did the first drive last year for Inside EVs, and it's a better ID4. Well, I don't say better. It's a more stylish, more comfortable, quieter ID4. And a lot of people like the Audi brand. I think it's a good entry level Audi to get into. If you want to go electric.
But that's a good point. Good point about the leasing. And so I just found out this week the first person that I know of in my extended family just got their first EV. So I'm not the only one, with it now. I have a cousin in Canada, in New Brunswick. This is a great person. And they're leasing a Ford Mustang Mach-E and going through that experience. And I would say going through an experience, because it's, I'm reminded about how difficult it is for some, for new people new to the EV world. Man, there's a bit of a learning curve, just with learning about charging and just regen and just basic things that we've, kind of absorbed and kind of take for granted or know all about already, and we don't think about too much anymore. But yeah, there's a whole lot to go into EV, and I think that's something that we need to think about more about, making it, helping people understand. It doesn't have to be that difficult necessarily to go to EV. There's a bit of a learning curve, but once you're over there, it's jump in the water is fine kind of deal, right?
I think it's a great time to go EV with vehicles like this, because I've been vocal before. We had the ID3 when it first came out, and it was like a nice Polo. You tap the doors and touch everything and that. And it was, I don't know what spec it was. I forget the spec of the ID3 that we had. We had it for 2 months on the driveway, and it wasn't great. And the software was bad. And it was cool that it was a custom built VW on an EV platform. And it was great there was lots of good things about it, and it was very spacious, but the price of the one we had, which was my 35,000-36,000, it was probably more than that. It felt like just a slightly nicer VW Polo. It didn't, and we've owned three Golfs. It didn't feel like a Golf equivalent. It was very much in that experience a step down. And that's why I wasn't, we had it for a couple of months, and my wife said, we can't, we were thinking, should we buy one? And we wouldn't have bought the first ID3s. I know we're going to talk about ID3 in a future story, but what VW are doing with these updates, there's nothing wrong with the vehicles that were on the road already. If you've got one, you've got a great vehicle. But it feels like what they're doing now with the better motor, over 250, almost 260 miles EPA range on this, 175 kilowatt DC charging, the bigger screen. I don't know if you mentioned that I was bringing stuff up and bringing up the wrong page when you were talking.
No, the bigger screen, that's good. Yeah, good.
Did you mention that? It's either,
I did not mention a whole lot really about it.
Like the ID7's got the big 15-inch screen, and the software is so much better. It's still not perfect, but it's just, it feels like it took them a little while on the second iteration, and then there's going to be the next generation of these where they get rid of the silly buttons on the steering wheel that are just high gloss, and they're going back to buttons. Thank goodness. It was a silly phase that the car industry went through with this piano black high gloss stuff, the horrible steering wheel. But that Golf steering wheel, or the Mark 7 Golf, was the best thing they'd made. Just use that on the ID cars. And so it feels like they've really hit their stride now. I'm a bit of a VW fanboy today, aren't I? But it feels like they've really hit their stride. And these are great. The Q4 e-tron now is a very, very compelling car.
Yeah. I think both ID4 and the Q4 e-tron are both, I feel very comfortable recommending them now. You know, but I don't have to, you know, have to any reservations. Okay, well, if you live in the, if you have to precondition a lot and you live in the cold, you know, you might have to yo-yo the car to warm it up enough to get a decent charging speed. All that is done now, or a leggy screen. You know, it's just, it's good product now, and nice efficient motors and good power even in the rural drive. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with where VW is finally right now. It took them a while, but I think they're really on their stride right now with this product, at least. I don't know if there's anything you have want to say about that, Tom.
Not really about Volkswagen. No, yeah. I mean, you know, the new software is great. I've used it, you know, and I think people are going to really see it's worlds better than what they had in the vehicles before.
Yeah, I need to maybe see if I can get a hold of it, because I've never driven the Audi Q4 e-tron, so I should try that one out. I was going to go maybe to my dealer and try out the 2024 ID4 with the new motors and stuff to see what it is, but maybe I should really check out the focus on the Audi, because it's, you know, just one I haven't had that much experience with, and they tuned the suspension and everything differently, so you know, it's a more Audi experience. And yeah, this, I could benefit from learning more about that, I think.
So Mighty Unlikely asked, will we ever get the ID3 in the US? And that's mighty unlikely.
So, right.
That's your answer.
Yeah. What about the ID? So you were mentioning, Martin, earlier, I don't think it's in our show notes. We don't have anything about the ID2 or ID1 or something. But there was some news about that, I think, just yesterday, possibly.
Yeah, they had a media day where they did a thing on stage with the executives, and they had all the press lined up in like a classroom at loads of the, you know, did you guys ever have these desks in school that had the sort of the flip up top, and you could keep your pencil case and your books underneath it? it was almost like COVID times, and everyone was 3 meters apart, and it was a big room, and you had all these journalists just lined up like a big classroom. Can we ask a question, please, of Mr. Schaefer? And it was quite a funny visual. But they had it was either yesterday or the day before. I had a big media day. They talked about it, and they said that, you know, their roadmap is very much still full on electrification, and that to talk to the point of the narrative around of always there's some doubt around EVs, they said the only thing that they've noticed is that the various different territories are now going at the different speeds to what they had predicted. So China headlong into EVs, and they've got to raise their game there. Europe headlong into EVs, and we are just behind. The US, no doubt, taking a bit of a breather and a pause, and that is where a lot of the narrative is coming from. But they're saying it's just a regions issue, and that VW itself is absolutely committed to sticking to the plan. And one of those parts of the plan is small affordable city cars, probably not for the US, and making them very compelling with good range. But a 20,000 price point, and the ID1, they said, was designed. It's done. Visually, it's conceptualized, I think was the phrase they used. And so that'll be in, you know, that'll be in the computer, and that'll be in sort of the clay modeling and all those kind of things. And ID2 coming as well. So that really good to hear them talk about that, because also this week I also on the podcast also talked about the Dacia Spring, which is great. Europe's cheapest car, and that is, which is the cheap bit of Renault, and that's coming in at $14,995 for a brand new car with an almost 30 kilowatt hour battery. Yes, it charges at 30 kilowatts, and yeah, that's the base price, etc. But if you need a brand new vehicle, or you're going to pay monthly for a brand new vehicle, and you need mobility, we are starting to get into the territory now. And that will, of course, depress the prices of all those other vehicles that were swimming in that kind of price range that were maybe 2-3 years old, pushes all those down. Well, I can get a brand new car for $14,995. These are the kind of China prices that we've seen, and that goes on sale later this year. Right-hand drive in the UK to join the left-hand versions as well in Europe, in mainland Europe. And so that's been on sale already, but it's getting a really decent refresh. And there's some, you know what, there's some interesting styling bits on the Dacia Spring. It's not just a bland wagon. There's some bits of that that are nice to look at. It's got phone connectivity. It's got a big screen inside it. And so the idea is that, well, most people are probably going to have a smartphone they can plug in. So put a big screen, have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, and fill your boots. And so that's really compelling. And VW, along with the arrival of the Chinese cars, and whether Europe adds tariffs to those cars coming in, or whether those Chinese companies just end up having factories in on the European mainland, which I think is likely as well, to avoid those tariffs, VW can't get left out of that. And so that was part of the presentation this week, and it's really good to see.
And that's you talk about the Spring on your podcast, EV News Daily Podcast on YouTube, which is, you know, live Martin every day. Hit your notification button so you don't miss that. So let's
back to doing regular shows for those that have commented, where's Martin?
So. Why is he on YouTube? And I like the audio version because they're like, you know, people can't see my face, but all you guys said, come on, put it back on. So I have, and the point, we go live at 5 every day, which is midday Eastern, or actually different for you at the minute because you're 4 hours separately. I should change my script, but yeah, we like to go live, have a chat in the comments. And it forces me to deliver the podcast at a certain time every day as well. So, a little bit stressful, but good to get a live stream out there every day at the same time. And I look forward to chatting to people about on today's program, all the things we're talking about.
So if you want to learn more about the Dacia Spring, it's just 2 episodes ago. So you can go check out this channel and learn more about that car. That was one of those cars that came out, the Dacia Spring, where it's like, I'd feel it's difficult to recommend a car like that because it's built to a price to a fault to a price.
Yeah,
you know, but now it's relatively civilized and the price tag hasn't, I don't know how, if it has the price gone up at all or much
For the Spring.
Yes,
it's gone down as far as I know.
Amazing.
Yeah
it's so, a much more car than it was before.
You know, the next cheapest cars are in the mid-20s, and that would be the electric Volkswagen Opel Corsa E or the MG4, you know, base model. And so, yeah, but they are better cars. Don't get me wrong. They charge faster, bigger batteries. But if you need cheap mobility, it knocks down that argument from people, oh, well, EVs are for rich, privileged people,
right,
you know, who earn lots of money. And, you know, it just knocks that away.
Right, like $230,000 Porsche Taycans. But on the other end of that, on the other end of that, we've got Volkswagen. So this ID.1, so I saw a picture of the ID.2, and I was like, oh, I like that, because it's, you know, small city cars. I mean, I love me a small city car like that. But the ID.1 has got an entry price, I think, 20,000. I don't know if it's euros or pounds or dollars, but the 20,000 sounds like a pretty decent number to start out for, you know, a good quality. There's Kyle joining us, and the thing would be Adam to the stage.
Hey, Cybertruck, is that right?
Hey, you got a better connection there. You look great. Oops.
Yeah. There you go. I was trying to figure out if I can switch the camera forwards. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Back. Okay, so we can see the
camera. Oh, there we go.
Hey, great. Cybertruck live.
Where are you at?
Yeah, the road, the I-80 is closed in Wyoming, which I thought it would open by today. So I'm just sitting here. You know, happens when the road closes and you're in an EV and it's cold outside? That's this scenario, actually.
Kyle's going to freeze to death.
That's right. But I've got 92% because my hotel had charging.
Nice. So
I am,
nice.
You know, I could probably live here for like 3 weeks.
So, no worries about if a blizzard pours in and you're stuck there for a while, then I guess unless, I don't know.
No, I've got the mono wiper. It'll take care of all
look
the snow.
At that massive wet noodle just flopping around.
So why don't you give us a little tour of the interior of that car while you're sitting there?
Yeah, I can show you guys around. So I've got screen, and that's about it for controls. We put a shade in the roof back here, but it's got, that'll come out eventually. It's got my bags in the back. We've got, you know, some drinks up here, and that's about it to see inside the Cybertruck. It's not blending in
not
Wyoming.
A lot of knobs or buttons in there.
No,
not much really to show you guys.
are you used to the attention yet, or is it still a novelty? Are you getting used to it?
Oh no, I think it's exciting to see people. I don't even care if they're interested in EVs or not, but it's just exciting to see people that are interested in cars. And so yes, there's a lot of car interest in this. Everyone talks to you. In Wyoming, this is like the last place you'd expect to see a Cybertruck. And I pulled into the service station yesterday, and like all the employees walked outside and were standing around it, and they were all excited about it. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we're
cool.
If you want to say it's false, I know I've been hard on it a little bit. We talked about maybe it didn't deliver on some of the promises and everything. I think sometimes I look back and say I'm a little bit too harsh sometimes because, I also at the same time love it when companies step out of the comfort zone and do things differently. And we can always say Tesla is not afraid to do things that are just, what everybody else says you can't do. You can't make Falcon wings. Other companies have tried it. They failed. It's we're going to make Falcon wings. You can't make this, Mars mobile out of, cold rolled stainless steel that, exoskeleton and everything. No one would try to do that. Yeah, we're going to do that. So, as sometimes as hard as I am on Tesla, because some of the things they do, I'm not, totally in line with. I do really commend them for, number one, dragging the entire industry into electrification, because we would have gotten there, but we would have gotten there a decade later if there wasn't a Tesla. I believe one way or the other, right, we would have transitioned to electric vehicles. But Tesla dragged everybody by their hair into this. And now with these different vehicles, even with Model X, with the doors, yeah, it can be done. There's going to be some pain in that. But if you really want to have these gold wing or Falcon doors, you can do it. And if you want to make some kind of crazy ass vehicle that no manufacturer would touch, you could do it. And you know what? People are going to be like it and be interested in it. So, sometimes I feel I have to give Tesla more credit than I do on some locations, on some instances. And I'm glad there is a Cybertruck. I decided not to buy one for myself, but I definitely want to drive Kyle. So I'm high on his list of when he's done making his content. I'm going to get that for a little while, but I'm so happy there is a Cybertruck is basically what I'm saying. Mm. It's not the right vehicle for me, but I'm glad that Tesla made it.
And what are your guys' thoughts on these early Cybertruck owners? Obviously, a big queue of people behind them who would like to have one that are selling their vehicles at auction houses. Now, I know Tesla have not yet enforced the $50,000 lawsuit, which seems to be in the contract. I don't know. Kyle, you've actually signed a contract to buy a Cybertruck, a Cyber Beast. So did you even read the fine print? I know you're not going to be selling your truck, but what's your thoughts on these people that got it and were like immediately flipped it? I don't want to take a moral high horse stand, but I'm like, come on, you got the car before lots of other people wanted it. Drive it. Let your friends drive it. Have fun with it. Don't just cynically make money out of it, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I have, again, a connection issue, and I can't hear you. It was
okay.
You're coming through. I can tell you're...
Oh, he really had a connection issue.
He really did that time.
He wasn't joking. He should have his Starlink. Kyle has a Starlink.
He does.
He keeps it in his van. He should have brought that with him and just plug it in.
I think he pays for the extra Starlink service for the RV Starlink,
right,
where you can drive. You can drive with it, and so.
I think there should be an option, right? A Starlink option in the
Where's your Starlink, Kyle?
I left it in my Sprinter. I should have brought it, but I think there's got to be a way to mount it to the Cybertruck. I'm going to do that.
That would look cool, I think.
Yeah.
I think that would be the perfect option. It'd be under the vault, so when you want to stop and broadcast, just open up the vault and boom, it's got access to the sky.
Somebody tried that in, I was on social media. Someone has that, I think, in their Model 3 or their Model Y, and they're able to put it under the glass roof and it gets a connection. And they tried that with their Cybertruck and they couldn't get a signal, or there's something different about the glass or just when they tried it. So, maybe you need to mount it on top.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Under the Vault's a good idea. It's so funny because there's just very few oncoming cars at the moment. And like already three people have almost stopped right here.
Look at the Cybertruck. Wow.
So if you wanted crazy. To. No. So you still don't want, you still don't have the update with the locking differentials yet, I guess.
Correct. No locking differentials at the moment.
So if you wanted to go around and, you know, just cross that median there and get on the other side of the highway and go back the other way, that might be a risk right now. Or do you think you could make that?
I don't think locking diffs would really help you in this situation, but there's a metal guardrail that would stop you no matter what.
Okay. So, you got a little metal guardrail stop the Cybertruck?
I mean, they say it's the world's toughest truck, but we've been instructed not to leave any insects or bugs on the metal. So we can't leave that. Can't do that.
It can repel bullets, but not bugs.
Yeah. Oh, actually, right. I saw a good video. What's his name? Jerry Rig Everything has a great video this week. Yeah. If you like seeing people shoot at the Cybertruck, he shoots at it with like a Glock 9mm, a 22. It goes up to 50 cal. 50 cal will definitely.
I saw that truck yesterday.
Really? Cal definitely penetrates at least the door. That's amazing. Yeah, that was a fun video. I gotta say.
Yeah, I saw him yesterday driving down the highway.
Wow, no way. Amazing. Well,
that was you put that on Twitter?
Yeah.
Was that the truck that you passed? Okay, cool.
Cool. Wow. I see even one of the Tesla engineers, or maybe even the lead engineer for Cybertruck, is his name Wes Merrill? I probably got that wrong. Sorry. I think he even responded to that as well to be like, yeah, so can we stop shooting the truck now? Because I think he was amused by it, but was like, okay, we've proved the point. Stop shooting it.
But it did stop like a 9mm, right? I think.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah, that's good. So like with a 9mm,
that's like bulletproof as far as I'm concerned, because that's like the gun du jour of like street gangs and stuff. You know, right. It's like, you know, if you're worried about drive-by shootings, I think it does a pretty good job with that. I mean, of course, they can get a headshot and glass isn't stopping it. Right. But you know, it's pretty good that it stopped. I was impressed that it stopped the 9mm.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't stop the AR-15 either, but I mean, and that's a long gun, whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot less of those, I think, just, you know, roaming the streets, you know.
Right, exactly.
Inner cities or whatever.
Right. Martin, you were asking Kyle about reselling. Do you want to repose that question real quick?
Yeah, Kyle, if you can hear me. What's your thoughts on fellow early Cybertruck owners that have flipped theirs already and made some money?
No issues with it. That's, you know, you buy a truck, if you have the title, you should be able to do whatever you want with it. I'm certainly not going to resell mine. I bought mine for content, not to flip it. So we have a different money-making scheme here rather than just selling the vehicle. But ultimately, we're able to buy it, enjoy it, hopefully not lose too much on it. And really, really enjoying the truck. I'm a fan. If it's got a price of $207,000 and people are selling it for that, they should be able to buy a product and sell it for whatever they want, my opinion. And if you choose that you don't like that price, well, don't buy that truck.
Right. So I just found out yesterday there's a place in New Jersey by you, Tom, J&S Auto House. They're like buying and selling Cybertrucks. Like they're all over the place with that. But they also buy Fisker Oceans and sell some of those. And I believe they loaned a Fisker Ocean to Marcus Brownlee, who made a video with it. And so that video caused a lot of waves. And even so, and yeah, it's part of one of the stories on my list here today. So between that story and all the other issues that Fisker is having, people found out that maybe they've hired some bankruptcy consultants. And so that was a big story yesterday. Their stock like plunged 55%. Man, it's down significantly right now.
So it went from a dollar to 50 cents?
I mean, I was looking at their whole journey.
Yeah, genuinely. Anyway, it was trading at like $20 not so long ago, and now it's 50 cents. Or I mean, it might even be on screen. I'm not looking, but it was an insane day for Fisker. And they seem unable to... to light a fire underneath the momentum behind the vehicle and the company.
Right.
You know, put people's minds at ease, or, you know, get rid of the doubts. And also the MKBHD video didn't help. And also, did we tell the story of what happened after that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure
we did.
There's a video on TikTok, so I know this part of the story because I listened to the recording. Some senior engineer from Fisker called up this J&S Auto House who supplied Marcus with the thing, and they didn't. It was almost like an intimidating kind of call. It was like kind of really weird. Like, okay, you know, it ended up resolving in a way that, okay, we're going to come out and update your software, because so Fisker, the big problem with the Fisker Ocean, it seems to be mostly the software. Right now, a lot of customers, they're waiting for this 2.0 software, because so I drove the Fisker Ocean, was that 2 weekends ago? And, you know, it doesn't have little things like hill hold, or, you know, in the version that I drove. There's a bunch of things that was just not available yet because the software wasn't there that you would expect a car at launch to have. Fisker's really struggling right now. I don't know. It seems like they were super ambitious with this whole project, you know, launching everywhere, and now they don't have the software quite ready to where it really should be. And a lot of owners are worried about service, getting service. You know, if you crack your windshield, which has happened to at least one owner, like, how do you get a replacement windshield? Where, you know, how does all that happen? It's the owner's a bit nervous. But the hardware seemed to be fine. So this was developed with Magna. So Magna has a great history of making EVs. They make the I-Pace, they make other EVs. I don't know. It's like they've developed this platform, but now, like with this big crash in the price and everything over time, this company, I mean, I could buy it. No, well, maybe not me personally. But if I had some backers, I mean, it's not a big, I think it was below, their market cap was below $100 million, which is for a car company, that is nothing, you know, basically.
Yeah, they talked about a bailout from Nissan to get access to the truck design that they'd done. And that kind of went, like, that news came and went, and just that would be great if that did happen, and, you know, Nissan could fold in the design elements and any work they've done already, and then make that the Nissan midsize truck, or, you know, whatever.
I think Tom should buy it. Somebody should buy the company and run it. You know, who knows, has good, you know, experience running big, complicated companies. Keep Henrik as a designer, and you know, some other role as ambassador and designer, because people like his designs. I mean, that's,
but Dominic,
yes,
like if someone were to buy Fisker, what would they get?
They would get a platform, but
platform's Magna's. They could just go to Magna and get that platform.
Could they, for the same money? Yeah. I don't know. That's a lot.
I don't think Fisker owns the right to. I don't know how this works, but so much of that vehicle is done by Magna. Why couldn't an automaker just go to Magna and just get it from them and not have to deal with the Fisker stigma attached to their brand? Because other than design, there's nothing proprietary. There's features. There's like California mode, but that's not a core technology.
No, that's fine. But yeah, I think it's a combination of design and some of the branding. So Fisker's still a small company. Most Americans, even, or people in the world, have never heard of Fisker, even though, you know, lots of people have, and, you know, they have quite a core owner group. It's still, you know, relatively unknown. So I feel they're still at a stage where a company could come in and just revamp the image somewhat and get things, you know, back on track. And keep, you know, keep the design heritage and have the design, keep Henrik for future design, because people are, you know, attracted. It's a lot of money for one of these things. And so if your design is strong enough to convince people to shell out, you know, $60,000-$70,000 for a vehicle for a company with no track record, you know, it's, you get to say the design has to be pretty decent. You know, that's,
I think Hendrick will design cars after he's done with this company. I think we as a society need to get a little bit more comfortable with the idea of car makers will fail through this transition. Mm-hmm. And we just need to see what will happen. I'm not saying Fisker will fail. You know, in the past, it's very unusual to have a car company just go bust. There are bailouts, there are buyouts, there's very atypically do they just dissolve. But this might be a case of I don't know the financial background, but if they do go belly up, we are not missing out on anything. I don't think any other car company is missing out on anything. No. And so, a design is, I mean, it's a good looking car, but it's not like a wow, and anyone can design anything. So
it's something to lose.
I think if they go belly up, it'll make a really cool collector's item.
I saw a social media post yesterday which charted Henrik's new house that he bought in the Hollywood Hills for $21.8 million. That's the benefit of being CEO of when this SPAC craze happened. So he'll be okay. I hope anyone who bought that vehicle will also be okay, by the way, and you get the full support that you need to if Fisker doesn't make it in the long term.
Right. I don't know what to say about that.
What, the Henrik news?
It was just that house.
Well, you know, RJ's Garage is a billionaire because of, SPACs and flotations. So everyone at that time, 2-3 years ago, that went through this crazy phase, and it's not done yet, then there was money to be made. There's also a subsequent amount of pain that nearly all of those companies I've had to deal with, from Rivian to Lucid to tomorrow as well.
Right. Mark Norman, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Donation. He says, Leaf owners rejoice. Nomadic Hippie successfully demoed the CCS1 to CHAdeMO adapter in the US. Go check it out. It's spendy, but worth it if you road trip your 62 kilowatt hour Leaf. So there is now, I guess, an adapter for the for Leaf owners to charge at CCS stations, which is really helpful, actually, for Leaf owners.
There's a couple of companies putting them out now.
Are there?
Okay. Yeah. I have one that's supposedly coming. From the company that's coming to me, I liked a little bit better than the one that he has. So I didn't order it from them. And this other company, I think it's a little bit of a better adapter. It's just they weren't fully done with it yet. And they're supposed to send me one like as soon as it gets, they have like the first one off the line. So hopefully within the next couple of weeks, I'll have one of those too, and we could talk about it on the show.
A big shout out to Darla's EV YouTube channel. I've thrown it up on screen because it's definitely worth a sub if you want to find out more about EVs, batteries. He plays around with stuff. And he's also got, he's done some little videos on the CHAdeMO to CCS adapter as well. And just a really good YouTuber.
Oh, cool.
Since we're talking about the adapters, I met in the comment stream about 20 minutes ago, somebody asked about if you buy a new Ford EV now, do you get the adapter? So the way it works is Ford's going to allow you to apply for the adapter, go online and enter your VIN until June 30th. So if you buy a Ford Transit, Lightning, or Mach-E, e-Transit, up until the 30th and get your VIN from Ford, because you need the VIN. You have until June 30th to fill out the form to get your adapter sent to you. And that's the cutoff date, June 30th. Even if you currently own a vehicle, if you don't do it by June 30th, you won't get the adapter. And the biggest problem is, or question is, we don't know how long it's going to take to get these out. And Jim talked a little bit about that in the interview I did, that he said this is going to take a while. And he said, he talked about doing a lottery system, some sort of a lottery system where, you know, it won't necessarily be the first person to fill it out, because a lot of people are filling these out now. And that's how they're going to do it, because it's going to take 7 to 8 months to get adapters into everyone's hands. So that's a while, and I know people are going to be anxious to get them. And so actually the adapters that Kyle and I got, these are like pre-production adapters that Tesla's making. We actually have to give these back to Ford, and they're going to give us the production version. So supposedly, you know, look the same, but for whatever reason, they don't view these as full production adapters. So they're not even like they don't even have the full production ones yet. So it's going to take a little while to get these out.
But if someone really wants, there are adapters in the aftermarket. And Tom, I think you're taking a look at some of those coming up this over the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, I've all week I've been using them to charge my Lightning multiple times. I have, this is the Electron, and this is the A to Z. Mm-hmm. So the A to Z is actually almost exactly the same dimensions as the Tesla's adapter, except the Tesla's adapter is kind of like a full size cover. But the dimensions and weight are exactly the same. I'm going to do comprehensive videos on all three adapters, reviews, and then including thermal tests and everything, and then do a fourth video that compares them all. And I'm going to go over the features that they all have and comparing them also. I've been using the Electron and the A to Z. A lot of people have been asking me, Tom, do these work? Yes, they work. At least at this point, they work just fine. I'm not seeing any thermal issues with either of them. They're all at least the exterior temperatures are not getting any hotter than the Tesla adapter. Matter of fact, the Tesla connector during the whole charging session is hotter than the adapters. So, but we'll see. You know, I'm not an engineer. I haven't opened them up. I've talked extensively to the company CEOs and even some of the engineers in A to Z and Electron about what they did. And I know both companies are actively working with OEMs to have the OEM say, this is on our approved adapter list. We don't know if that's going to happen, what OEMs, but I know both companies are very hopeful that some of the companies are going to say, this is an approved adapter on our list. You can use this. So we'll see.
All right. Let's see. Let's move along. So this is kind of good news for GM. The Chevy 2024 Chevy Blazer EV is back on sale again. So they had a stop sale on the Chevy Blazer EV because of the, I believe, software issues. There was, people were having some, concerning software issues. So they put a stop sale on that. So now if you wanted the 2024 Blazer EV, it's back on sale. And if you're kind of worried about it, they've given a bit of an incentive. They've cut the price somewhat. So the prices have changed depending on the price cut depends on the EV model you get, but you can get it as low as the LT all-wheel drive. You can get with the for $50,195 as the new MSRP. So that's down like over $6,000, $6,500 doing the quick math in my head. And then it's still eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. So that's now a $42,695 MSRP or price. I don't know. What do you think about that price point, Tom? Think it's going to change some minds?
It's definitely better. But, the whole biggest
don't hold back.
Impediment at this point is price with electric vehicles, in my opinion. That's the biggest impediment. And actually, in my interview with Jim, I talked to him about, maybe the fact that they didn't, they had a cut back production on Lightning and Mach-E recently. And what do you think the cause is? I asked him about the Osborne effect with, customers possibly waiting for vehicles with the NACS port. Because I know a lot of my followers said, I'm going to hold off now. I'm not going to buy an EV until it has the MAX port, the NACS port. And he quickly said, no, it's price. He said, no, it's price. It's hard to get past that initial MSRP being more than a comparable. Like what's can we line up a Blazer LT all-wheel drive MSRP against the EV Blazer? That's the comparison I want to see. How much more is it? And that's what we have to get past. The dealers have to be able to communicate total cost of ownership, not initial MSRP. And so few dealerships can do that. And that was, and I've said this many times on the podcast, that was one of my biggest focus when I did dealer training. You have to be able to quickly sit down on a piece of paper and say, I know this one's 60 grand and this one's 40 or 50 grand, but take a look at where you're at 5 years from now. And until dealers can do that, if the EV prices are more, the MSRPs are more, we're going to have slow sales. We'll continue to grow, but they won't grow at a rate that they could because it's about affordability. and they're still expensive vehicles. They still cost much more. The MSRPs cost much more than comparable gas vehicles.
Right. But Chevy has a lot of lot riding on this vehicle, so I think this was a great move to make it's like a good price cut. It's still, someone was saying it's still more than the Tesla Model Y, but it's a little bit different vehicle than Tesla Model Y too. Maybe, you know, I think it's kind of, it can stand on its own and compete against that car. You know, definitely, I think Tesla has some advantages on it in some ways, but then I think some people will be more attracted to the design of this. It's a definitely, I think it's a better looking car than Model Y personally. And that's a, you know, of course, that's, everyone's got a different opinion about appearances and designs and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, but yeah, GM is also going through a bit of a struggle right now. They've lost Gerald Johnson, who is, I think, their head of manufacturing, I believe, is retired. He's been there for quite a while. And also their head of software, I believe, who they got from, what's that company? Apple. Yes. I believe he's stepping away from the company too for health reasons.
Yeah, I saw that. It was either a LinkedIn post or something. He said, you know, he can't get his handle on some heart problems, and life's more important. And it was like, I'm stepping away. Like, wow, I really hope he's okay.
Right, right. And that's a good decision. You know, you don't want to, yeah, you need to take
that's
your,
a high stress job. Yeah, GM's, that's, GM that's software true. Is a high stress job. So yeah. Wish him all the best, and hopefully that's a swift recovery.
Right, and yeah. And but that leaves it's odd because that's the two places that GM has been struggling with the software, and I believe they brought this gentleman in to work on the software and get him up to speed, so hopefully that's kind of all, you know, taken care of, whatever. But they're really going to need a manufacturing expert, and I'm sure they'll find somebody to take the other gentleman's place. But just want to mention that is all kind of going on in the background here behind this, the Chevy Blazer being back on sale again. Let's see what else we got. Not a whole lot. We learned, so one of the most probably anticipated, more affordable performance cars. We're not talking $230,000 Porsches here. We're talking $67,475 for a Hyundai Ioniq 5 N. This thing is going to be a beastly little car, man. I don't know. That's a lot of money, I think, personally, for me still. But I think people in the performance car, like who like performance cars, and I think that's a decent bargain. I don't know. What do you think, Tom?
I don't know about a decent bargain. It's a great car. I wish it was $6,000 or $7,000 less, but I mean, you know, I think that, you know, I mean, Hyundai knows their numbers, what they have to charge. You know, I don't think they're gouging. It's probably a lot of money went into developing this. It's not just like, you know, stickers and badges. You know, they made a much better car.
So, you know, it's wider, and it's longer, it's different.
And that costs a lot of money, and companies don't do things for the fun of it. You know, they have to get a return on their investment. And even if they're like breaking even with the money they invested on it, this isn't going to be a high volume vehicle. They're going to sell, you know, I don't know, a few thousand of them a year, you know. So, you know, I mean, while I think it's awesome, it's a lot of coin. I mean, you look at some of the other vehicles you can get in that price range, you know, and
just the Model 3 Performance when it comes back on sale.
There's, you know, I'd have this.
It's a different kind of car.
Performance, I think. I would take this before that.
Oh, every day of the week.
Yeah.
Of
course. I like driving Kyle's Tesla Model 3 Performance. That's the only one I know. That had messed up suspension when I had it. And it's a lot better car now. But I think this really kind of appeals to me. I've always loved the design of the Ioniq 5. And this design with the crazy kind of performance they've put into it now, and different screen, different modes and abilities. It looks like a very compelling package.
It is, but it's still a lot of coin.
It's a lot of coin. It's outside of my budget for sure. And this, maybe I can write a hit song and something. I don't know. It's always my dream, right? Win a lottery, write a hit song. There's got to be, you know, stumble across.
By Fisker, you know. I
mean, yeah, absolutely.
Set your goals high, Dom.
A couple of tycoons, yeah.
Right. Okay. The other thing we have in our notes here, and I guess Martin, you would know more about this than I. the new Volkswagen ID.3 GTX and ID.7 GTX Tour come with more power and sporty looks, according to Inside EVs. And this is Europe, because the ID.7 GT Tour is a station wagon, and we don't get it here now.
Sure.
And maybe never.
I can do this super quick. I know we've got to head off. I can do this super quick. So ID.3, dual motor, 335 horsepower or so, 2 kilowatt hour larger battery, but like 25 more miles of range. So they've actually done more magic than just adding a couple of kilowatt hours of usable. And so ID.3 GTX is now a serious GTI competitor. And again, they've done some funky stuff with, I think, the steering and suspension. It's all red stitching inside. Proper GTI seats inside it. Proper big wheels. The 13-inch or something, 13-inch display, I think, in the ID.3. But again, single motor in the ID.3. You're getting confused because there's no room in the front to put a front motor. So it's a GTI, a GTX, but rear-wheel drive, which is different to GTIs. And so that's very cool, but it's a big AP550, their big boy motor on the rear axle.
Wow.
It, for hooning around, it's going to be amazing. ID.7 GTX Tourer, and surely there's going to be a sportback version of this, but they chose to go with the estate version. So amazing. That is dual motor, for about the same horsepower, only like an 80 kilowatt motor on the front axle. So that really is there just to kick in when you need that front wheel drive to help the rear axle. So it's not split evenly, much more rear biased. Same storage in the back, so they haven't eaten into the back with extra batteries. In fact, it's the same battery, I believe, but it's got the big 15 inch touchscreen, all the new software with the preconditioning funky stuff to tell you how fast you'll charge when you get there. And again, lots of new body kit around it, and some, it's the fastest estate car VW have ever made. And I think it's the fastest accelerating 0-60 time car or GTI ever made for the ID.3. So it's like 4.7 seconds or 5 seconds, which again, is not Tesla fast, but Tesla can be a bit of a one trick pony, or at least they excel at getting that headline of the 0-60. But the Germans are different anyway. It's all about, hey, it's the entirety of the car, not just about going quick in a straight line. So two vehicles here that aren't on sale yet, but are on sale in the summer.
Wow. I really wish we could get that tour here. I put something about that on Threads last week, and I had a lot of responses. I'm not sure what we need to start, maybe a campaign. You know, we need more wagons, just because they have such a better profile. And you know, for electric vehicles, they just make sense. You get more range and the utility of an SUV. And Tom, you've driven the ID.7, and Kyle has too, and you both give it high praise. Do you think that the wagon would do something here?
You know, it's hard to say. I like it. I would want one. But,
a performance,
you know,
wagon.
The companies do these lots of consumer polls and focus groups and stuff, and it keeps coming back to them that somebody would rather have a crossover, an SUV, than a wagon. And they're not going to bring it here if they're not going to sell it. And, you know, just drive around, look at the parking lots. Everybody has crossovers and SUVs now. And right, that seems to be the vehicle that people want. It,
right.
You know, I would rather drive one of these, you know. You know, it's unfortunate that we don't get them, just like we don't get the small hatchbacks. Someone was asking earlier in the comments, when are we getting the ID.3, you know, and, you know, not likely.
I'd like the ID.2 GTX, please. That's what I that's what we'd like to see come over here. I mean, that's my car. I would buy that, probably. I would sell my Model 3 to get that, I think. I really love to have my Spark EV. You know, it had lots of, happened, a great city car, that kind of a thing in a more robust, you know, Volkswagen. I think that would be just the move. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. We really appreciate those. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications, because we got some surprise episodes coming. And thank you all very much for joining us. We're really great to see, hang out with you all this morning today. It's always great to see all these, you know, familiar names in the chat that we, you know, it's our dedicated audience is just awesome. Right. So thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you again very soon. Ciao.